Sports Time Radio. All sports, all the time.
It's Monday, and hey, what the heck, take the week off with Sports Time Radio. I'm the Big Jack. With me is Dan the Man. If you'd like to call into the podcast, 646-478-3753 is the number to do that. If not, feel free to email us, sportstimeradio@hotmail.com. Anything else you need, head on over to sportstimeradio.com. Now, you know, those blogs go up on Wednesdays and Saturday mornings. So, you know, swing on over there, catch up on anything you might have possibly missed. Of course, while you're at sportstimeradio.com, go ahead and hit that link, get yourself over to the Sports Time Radio Facebook page. If you could like that while you're over there, well, hey, we greatly appreciate that. But don't forget, we also have the Twitter feed, which is at Sports Time Radio. Now, Dan and I are on Twitter as well. I am at Burke Time, and Dan the Man is at?
Dan the Man with 3 E's.
All right. Well, you know, obviously, Dan, we have, you know, week whatever the hell it was in the NFL wrapping up tonight. And I was kind of trying to figure out which team is the bigger dumpster fire after yesterday, the Chicago Bears or the Cleveland Browns? You got any ideas?
I thought the Browns were supposed to be the best team in NFL history.
Yeah, well, you know, there was talk. You remember preseason, it was, you know, Cleveland. You know, Chicago was supposed to be a very good team, but Cleveland was a Super Bowl contender, allegedly. So, and hey, you know, maybe they still will be. I mean, they still got plenty of games left, and they do have a really easy schedule. But that easy schedule started yesterday when they just got pretty much embarrassed by the Denver Broncos. So, yeah, who were actually starting a quarterback that had never taken a snap in the NFL. But, you know, they're 2-6, so they have, what's that leave, 8 games. They got 8 games left. So maybe, I don't know, any hope of them turning it around?
No. I had to think hard about that one.
Yeah, so I wanted to take a peek here because I know I looked at it last week, but I want to check their schedule again because if I remember correctly, they had the easiest schedule starting from yesterday on for the rest of the season. But like I said, obviously that didn't help them much yesterday as they lost to, you know, Denver, who actually has more wins than them now. But it's one of those things. All right, let's see what we got left. Cleveland has, you know, Buffalo, which is a team they should be able to beat. You know, Buffalo's got a good defense, but not much of an offense. Then they play Pittsburgh, who, you know, isn't great this year without Roethlisberger. They got the Dolphins, who just got their first win yesterday. Then they've got the Steelers again. There's a lot of weird scheduling like that in the NFL this year where there's games apart for division foes. Then they have the Bengals, who haven't won a game. They're actually 0-8. Then, you know, they got a couple tough games. They're at Arizona to play the Cardinals, who have been a better team than I believe anybody expected. And then they got the Ravens in week 17, who appear to be the best team in that division. But then they wrap up their season. I mean, if they're in a must-win the last week of the season, they've got Cincinnati. So they have a very winnable game to end it. Can they go 7-1 or 6-1? Well, I guess they got to go 7-1 probably to have any playoff chance. Can they do that?
No.
So, you know. And then, I don't know, did you see this? the weird story about the player they cut today? So, you know, did you hear? Yeah, here. Apparently, his name was Jermaine Whitehead. Did you catch anything about this story? Because it seemed really kind of strange.
He got popped.
Ooh. Yeah. Well, apparently,
the fans were apparently on him for his play, and when the game was over, he went into the locker room and apparently started, as the quotes they use, posted profanity-laced and threatening comments on his Twitter feed. Oddly, and what I thought was just kind of in a humorous way, Twitter actually suspended his account before he was out of the locker room after the game.
Wow, those confused.
So, I thought that was kind of, like I said, just kind of humorous that they reacted that back to it. But yeah, the Browns responded in the proper way by cutting him. Now they don't make the tweets available, so I don't know exactly what he said. He then went on Instagram this morning, and oddly, and I don't understand this one at all, he apologized for his performance in the game. He didn't apologize for the tweet. So I guess, Dan, what I'm kind of wondering is, did this guy just cost himself his NFL career? Because, I mean, you know, he's not a top player. And, you'd probably touch Colin Kaepernick before you touch this guy, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I think with the way the NFL works, you push the wrong buttons, you're out. Doesn't matter how you spend your birthday meeting homeless people or not.
Yeah. So yeah, I just didn't, you know, it's like, okay, well, I get it, you're upset, the fans were giving you a hard time, but I'd like to think you're used to that by now. But yeah, apparently this guy just kinda wigged out and, you know, started going off on people. And yeah, it doesn't make sense to me. If you're going to go out and apologize for the way you played in the game, why not just apologize about the tweets, right? And say, hey, it was just an overreaction or something like that.
This is where social media is good and bad.
just kind of add that to all the, all the other problems the Browns are having this year. But obviously, I believe they did the right thing and cut him. But what I'm wondering, Dan, is if this guy was the best cornerback in the league and just happened to have a bad day, would they have cut him or just suspended him?
I think they would have just suspended him.
And then here locally, Dan, and I'm kind of hoping you've been listening to the local media, because I kind of stayed away from it because I figured I knew what it was going to be about. Another Bears disaster yesterday. I saw that the national media is on the Mitchell Trubisky nickname. Well, that's kind of interesting that they've picked up on that one. I don't even know what to say, Dan. I watched a lot of this game, and they were bad. Then they were good and kind of got themselves back in it, and then they went back to being bad again. I don't even know how to describe this fiasco anymore. Do you? I mean, tell me you got something good.
No, I've pretty much I've thrown in the towel.
So yeah, it was just you know, it got to the point where there was actually a game on against them, the Colts and the Steelers. And I normally I don't do it with Bears games because they're the local team and I like to see everything. I actually found myself beginning to flip over to these other games just because I couldn't take it anymore. Oh. So, yeah, I was just kind of like, what the heck is going on here? But, there's just so many similarities between these two teams. You know, they were both predicted to be playoff teams. Of course, the Browns, again, were a lot of people saying they were going to the Super Bowl. You know, there was some Bears Super Bowl talk here and there, but that was mostly local, and you expect that out of these guys who get ahead of themselves or the fans that call in and, you know, oh, yeah, we're going to the Super Bowl. So, you know, you can kind of see that, but it's just such a fiasco here. And I mean, lucky, you know, the best thing that happened to them is the whole division lost yesterday. Just everybody stunk. Well, Minnesota didn't stink. They got beat by a pretty good Kansas City team. But here's what we're looking at for the Bears here the rest of the year, Dan. We've got the Lions at home. Then they're at the Rams, home against the Giants, at the Lions, home against the Cowboys, at the Packers, home against the Chiefs, and then at the Vikings. Dan, I think the thing that worries me here is there's only – I know they can beat the Lions, but depending on how they play, I don't know if they will. Other than that, there's only one really winnable game on this schedule, and that's against the Giants right now. I mean, that's the only team on the schedule they're better than. Are they 4-12?
No, I think they're going to be 3-13.
Yeah, so you don't think they're going to win another game?
I think the only game that they might win is against the Lions, but I don't see it. I don't think they're going to tank in the sense that they're tanking, but I think they're going to tank because they just, when you think about it, you know, everyone was so excited about Nagy coming in. Don't get me wrong, I'm not the biggest football guy, but from my understanding, he wasn't the one calling plays in KC up until.
So, yeah, it's just going a bad direction, and nobody seems to know how to kind of stop it. He's going to get more blame than he actually deserves, but, that's just kind of how it is when you're the quarterback. I did think it was funny that, I kept seeing on my Twitter feed or my Facebook page that they needed to go to Chase Daniels yesterday, Dan. He was the saving grace. And I'm not quite sure what I saw out of Chase Daniels that made me think that anybody thought he was going to be the saving grace.
Well, don't they just want the next guy in just to get over it?
Yeah, well, they always say the most popular player on your team when you're losing is the backup quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. I wonder if it's like that in Cleveland. I don't even know who the Cleveland backup is. We may have to look at that and see. But, yeah, apparently Chase Daniels was the saving grace. But, and then just real quick before we move on, Miami Dolphins running back Mike Walton was suspended for 4 games. He violated the NFL's conduct and substance abuse policy. Now, it wasn't a substance abuse suspension. What apparently happened is Walton was arrested 3 times this offseason in a span of 3 months, from January to March. I don't know why it took till November to decide he was going to be suspended for 4 games. But it's kind of a weird situation. They had just given him the number one running back job. They traded Kenyon Drake to the Cardinals. So I'm sure there were a lot of people who jumped on the Mark Walton fantasy bandwagon. You know, even though he's a Dolphin, you're still looking at a guy who's going to get regular reps, and, you know, that can always be a plus, even as just a flex play. But, yeah, you're going to have to do something for the next 4 weeks because he is in the he's gone for 4 weeks. So we'll see how that goes. But, yeah, just kind of a quick heads up there. But, all right, you know, moving on here, Dan, baseball-wise, you know, today was the day that players either had to accept or, you know, decide what they were going to do on their opt-outs or teams had to offer qualifying offers to their free agents. The qualifying offer was $18.7 million this year, and there were 10 guys offered, Dan. Here you go. Jose Abreu of the White Sox, Austin Bumgarner of the Giants, Gerrit Cole of the Astros, Josh Donaldson of the Braves, your guy Jake Odorizzi of the Twins got a qualifying offer, Marcelo Zuna of the Cardinals, Anthony Rendon of the Nationals, Will Smith of the Giants, Steven Strasburg also of the Nationals, and then Zach Wheeler of the Mets. So there you go. You believe any of these guys accept this offer?
Well, no, because it was $17.8 million.
Oh, did I get it backwards? I thought it was 18.7, but okay, 17.8. So I was close.
Yeah. No, I think the only one who might consider would be Abreu.
Oh, I thought Odorizzi might consider it. That's pretty good money for him there.
Yeah, but at his age, I would think he's looking to sign for at least 3 or 4 more years.
Yeah. So yeah, and you know maybe Will Smith at 17.8 million, being that he's a closer, you know, that's right around the money Aroldis Chapman just kind of re-signed for the Yankees. So it's possible Will Smith could take the offer. You know, obviously these guys have plenty of time now to wait on it. You know, maybe I'm not surprised by this, but why didn't the Yankees offer your guy Didi the qualifying offer? I mean, that's probably about where his salary would land anyways, wouldn't it?
Yeah, but I think you've already answered that months ago with Gleyber sort of taking that role.
Yeah, I know, but, you know, Didi can do so many other things. You know, played spec and he's played skilled. You know, I mean, he could easily move into a utility role, and then, you know, like you always got to ask, it's nice to have those guys like that. I mean, are they that sold on whoever's backing up the guys like LeMahieu and Torres, and who knows if Andujar is going to come back healthy from Tommy John?
Yeah, but think about how well they performed throughout the season.
I don't know. It just, you know, I think a lot of it is, you know, I think for me, since I like Didi, I kind of tend to overestimate his value. You know, because, like, I know they mentioned here that they thought Cole Hamels was going to get a qualifying offer, but I never thought that. Did you see the Cubs making that offer to Hamels? There we go. All right. Try this again. Did you see I was mentioning here, Dan, this article says that they're a little surprised they expected Cole Hamels to get the offer. I never really thought the Cubs were going to make that offer to him. Did you?
No.
You know, and I mean, I honestly don't think Hamels can get that on the free agent market. He's not a $17 million a year pitcher anymore, is he?
No. If they went to the World Series, he would have been, but we saw how that played out.
So, yeah, and then, no surprise, Steven Strasburg decided to opt out. I think we kind of saw that coming, no big shock there. I was trying to think, did we have a did any of the other big guys opt out? I know I saw that Martinez chose to not opt out, which I was a little surprised by, being a Boris guy. Were you surprised that he didn't take his opt out?
Yeah, I was kind of big-time surprised by it, but, you know, maybe having the money at this point of career is more important than not having it.
Yeah, you know, I didn't think if he took the opt-out that he would get as good as a contract. You know, I know he's due a bigger money this year than he is the final 2 years, but he can actually opt out again next year if he chooses to. So, you know, maybe that's something they were thinking about. But, you know, the sad part, or however, whichever way you want to look at it, is this is the worst case scenario for the Red Sox. You know, this is the exact worst thing they wanted to see happen. And you got to wonder, you know, is this really the end of Mookie Betts now in Boston, Dan? I mean, with Martinez coming back, this team is going to be way over the salary cap, or the luxury tax, excuse me. It's a luxury tax. You know, I mean, sure, you can deal Jackie Bradley and a couple of those, you know, other guys, and maybe there's an exception for Dustin Pedroia you can get. But that's not going to get you where you need to be. I mean, for them to get where they need to be, they really needed to eliminate Martinez's salary, which is $23.75 next year. The guess on Betts for his arbitration award, Dan, is $27.7 million. They're already about, well, they're already at about $242 million in salary. I don't know what the luxury tax is, but they're going to be way over it. You know, is this the end of Mookie Betts? Lost Dan again. So we wait for Dan to recycle. But, yeah, I don't know what else they can do. I mean, if they're that dead set on getting under the luxury tax. So that's what I was saying, Dan. Is this the end of Mookie Betts as a Red Sox?
Yeah, I think so.
So, you know, and I know there was even some talk about them, like, just non-tendering a guy like Jackie Bradley just to get his salary off the books. You know, you got to wonder, I mean, they have some other guys, the guys like Matt Barnes or Heath Hembry or Joel Olsich or even Marco Hernandez, do they just not even bother to go to arbitration with these guys and just non-tender them and let them walk away? You know, and now, do you know, maybe you could answer this, because Stu and I didn't know the answer to this. Dustin Pedroia has 2 years left on his deal. If he decides to retire, is there the NHL has that exception rule for injured guys, when, you know, like the Blackhawks got with Marian Hossa when he was forced into retirement. Do you know if there's anything like that in baseball, so the club gets a little relief against the luxury tax?
No, they're still on the hook.
Jeez. So, yeah, they're stuck with him. Yeah, they're stuck with Pedroia for $25 million.
Yeah. I was going to say, if you remember, A-Rod was still being paid by the Yankees after getting released by the Marlins.
Yeah, so, yeah, they are, you know, just really up against it, you know, because you're looking at, you know, some of their higher priced guys. You're not moving David Price at $32 million a year. I know there was some talk about it. Nobody's taking that deal. He's got 3 years left on that deal. That's $96 million of David Price. Nobody's taking that. Chris Sale's only, he's just going to be 31. I doubt you would give up on him. You know, you're not dealing Xander Bogaerts, who's signed at $20 million for the next 6 years. Yeah, I'm sure they would love to deal Nathan Eovaldi, who's got 3 years left at $17 million each. Nobody's taking him. You can probably find a taker for Vasquez, but he doesn't make enough money for it to really be a factor. Boy, Dan, this team is screwed. Luckily they're in a division that has two really bad teams in it. Otherwise, they could sink to the bottom.
Yeah, well, and don't forget about the Cuban kid in the minor league system, who I think is
right
in there for another year or two.
So, but they only got 1 year left in him, Dan. They're almost out from under them. I know. And you don't know. The interesting thing is, he may have to play. He may have to be a major leaguer next year, finally, just because they may need him to be.
Yeah. I don't know. You know, I mean, when you think about what the Nationals did last year, about the offer that they threw Bryce Harper, there was a lot of money contained in that. That was going to be deferred over a time period.
Yeah.
But you know, oh my God. God, train conductors don't shut up today. But you know, they wanted to defer a lot of that money, and you know, the problem with the deferring on, you know, the player side is $1 million today isn't going to be worth $1 million in 30 years. So you've got to wonder how, you know, inflation would work with that, and if they, you know, set up some kind of system where it would still hold its value in the future. But at the same point, you know, obviously it worked out tremendously for the Nationals because, you know, they still had a solid outfield and won a World Series. But when you think about it, I think, you know, the Nationals were not only thinking about, you know, retaining Bryce Harper, but also thinking about how their payroll structure would be in the future. And when you're stuck with too many guys getting paid $30 million a year, you're in a situation like Boston is in now.
Yeah, and, you know, I know, you know, Washington, you know, it'll be interesting to see if they can get Strasburg and Rendon to both come back. I know there was some talk that I guess they're planning to offer Strasburg like $25 million a year for 6 years. I did find it humorous that I had to listen to all the BS today about how many teams were interested in Strasburg. I of course would believe that every team would be interested in Steven Strasburg, especially after the year he had. So you can just throw that away. You know, as interesting as that is, I still damn well want to know if the Dodgers chase Anthony Rendon down and add him to that lineup and move Turner to first base. That's the big thing I want to know.
Yeah, I mean, but, you know, what about the Cubs signing him and moving Chris Bryant to right field until the trade deadline?
There you go.
He goes to Philly.
Yeah. Well, that could be the thing. They could sign him, and then, you know, he would be Bryant's replacement when they dealt him to you know, wherever. But, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see, you know, if the Nationals can get those guys back and how that kind of works out. You know, if they can land them back, they're in a really good spot to contend again. You know, and their payroll isn't off the wall. You know, you got Schulte, who's going to make over $35 million, but he's the only giant money guy. Corbin's contract doesn't pay him over $20 million till 2021. He's at $19.4 million next year. So, you know, they could probably get, you know, offer one a really big deal for sure. I don't know about the other one, but definitely one, don't you think?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I haven't looked at their structure for next year, but if what you say about Corbin, I mean, whatever you get Strasburg on, especially if you can land him, I think you, no matter what it is, you pay him like $30+ million this year. So that, you know, over the next 5 years at least, you're down.
So, yeah, they could, I mean, they could easily, you know, front load a contract for him and help kind of, you know, kind of handle that. And then, you know, Scherzer's only got two more years. He's got, you know, 2020 and then 2021. And, you know, you got to wonder, he'll be 37. So, you know, you don't know, you know, how much longer he'll be. Max Scherzer? So, you know, they might, you know, if he want, maybe, you know, maybe he'd want to stay in Washington, who knows? You know, maybe they could get him to come back for, you know, less money for a couple years if he wants to pitch till, say, he's 40. But, yeah, I don't think, obviously, depending on how they do, you know, if they manage to contend again, you know, he might consider coming back for a little lower number, since, you know, he would be with a winner. You know, you never know what guys think. But, yeah, you know, I like, obviously, I like their situation a lot better than I like the Red Sox.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and as it goes, you know, no one has repeated this decade so far.
Yeah.
If they land both of those guys, if they bring both back, do you think it's a possibility that they could kind of go back to the World Series? I mean, I think that they still have a, if they land both of them, I think they'll have a definite foothold onto kind of holding on to that National League East.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's, you know, it's interesting because, you know, I mean, to be fair, that, you know, if they didn't even win the East, it was the Braves.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, but yeah, with a team like that, I mean, you know, like you and I talked about, when you have those three big guys at the top, all you have to do is get in, and that gives you an opportunity to win. You know, because you're looking at, you know, big time aces who can go out there and deal, you know, and then they got that. I mean, I still can't get over the contribution that Anibal Sanchez made. You know, I mean, he had been terrible for so long, and then he goes and almost throws a no hitter against St. Louis in the championship series. So, you know, I mean, you don't know, you know, what they're gonna get there, but, you know, two of their best players, Juan Soto and Victor Robles, aren't even arbitration eligible yet.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I mean, they're in a fantastic spot with those two guys. And, you know, it's just, you know, obviously I think they're going to need a fifth starter, but, you know, you can say that about every team.
Yeah, and, you know, that's one of the things I think for Robles and Soto. This World Series run was great for them because I think they'll come back next year with a lot less pressure on their shoulders. Because, I mean, both of these guys, I'm not going to say anybody is perfect in this game. Everyone makes mistakes. But, you know, I definitely saw, you know, let's just put a handful between the two. I'm not going to knock them. Rookie mistakes, you know, young guy mistakes that they made. And I think that, you know, kind of revamping, and I don't know what the off-season protocol is, but if I were these two young kids, I would definitely be going back. And, you know, definitely not the whole season because baseball's a monster. But when you think about the World Series as a whole, I think I'd be going back just to see what I did and how I did it and what I can improve on. And then I think if they can create just a little bit more patience, that, you know, I think these two are just going to continue to grow. And I think it could definitely make a difference next year with the Nationals. But you know, it's not just those two guys. I think the league as a whole could use a little bit more patience, because I felt like some of the big hitters on the Nationals were, even the Astros, too many first pitch swings. You know, it's one thing to go after those in the regular season, but when you're in the World Series, you gotta watch that pitch.
You know, we can attribute that to, so we, you know, we don't even have to get into that. But I did also see the Brewers made a couple moves. You know, they, you know, as you know, they, you know, Mike Moustakas and Yasmani Grandal both declined their half of the mutual option with Milwaukee, so they became free agents. Today, the Brewers declined the option on Eric Thames, so he becomes a free agent. They bought him out for $1 million instead of paying him $7.5 million next year, which I thought was a pretty good deal, but for whatever reason, they made that decision. And then they dealt Chase Anderson off to the Blue Jays for a couple minor leaguers. Oh, you know, I don't know here, Dan. This is, you know, just on face value right now, going to be a hugely different-looking team. And I'm wondering if they did a little more harm than good. Like, I believe Moustakas' option was only $11 million. And he had a gigantic year for them. You know, they got lucky just to get him back, because for whatever reason, he sat out there on the free agent market. Are they just hoping that happens again and they can bring him back for low money? Or I mean, do you like these moves?
Yes and no. I think they're ready to move on from Chase Anderson, and I think they've got to make room for somebody else in that pitching rotation, and hopefully Jimmy Nelson can come back and not have a 20-plus ERA. I'm exaggerating, of course. You know, I think it was time to move on from Thames, but, you know, I think Moustakas would have been the guy I kept. You know, Grandal always kind of has the numbers, but you can't rely on him every day. And then with them being in the National League now, because that's so recent, you know, it's not like you could plug him in to the DH role at all. So I think if I were a Brewers fan, I'd be satisfied, but a little disappointed that they let Moustakas walk, unless they're planning on dishing out all their money to bring Rendon in.
Yeah, well, we know that ain't going to happen. So, you know, yeah, it was just kind of, you know, surprising. I thought they would keep Thames because he's their guy. And, you know, I mean, obviously he could, you know, fill a couple different spots. I guess maybe now they go to the Ryan Braun move to first base, you know, and finally get him out of the outfield. You know, they talked about that last year. But obviously with Thames there and, you know, Travis Shaw, who's a gigantic mystery, who knows what's going to go on there. You know, yeah, maybe it's time for Braun to take over his last couple years at first base. So, you know, we'll have to, you know, have to kind of see there how that works out. And then, you know, they have a pretty young rotation. You know, Jimmy Nelson is just the only one who's over 30 years old. So, oh, hang on. We had a caller, but we lost him. Sorry about that. I hope I didn't lose you. My apologies there. I didn't notice till too late. So I hope you weren't on hold too long. I've been flipping around online. You know, and of course, you know, at the back end of the bullpen, they got Josh Hader. You do wonder what else that'll look like or how it'll kind of play out for them, because I still don't like the way they manage the bullpen. They should get Corey Knebel back, which will help, you know, towards the back end. You know, he's recovering from Tommy John, but that was April, I think. He had it, so he should be back, if not the early part of the year, then at least by the All-Star break. So, you know, that'll be a nice influx. But, yeah, you know, like I'm looking at the bullpen names and, you know, there's nothing that jumps out, but it's a bullpen and you never know. And these guys come out of nowhere. So, you know, we'll have to see. But, yeah, I mean, you know, their rotation, you know, they're looking at Brandon Woodruff, who was really good for them, but obviously only pitched 4 or 5 innings a game. We got to see if that changes. You know, Zach Davies is still hanging around. You know, with Anderson being traded, I think they finally got to put Freddy Peralta in the rotation and leave him there. You know, they have a tendency to put him in there, then send him down, and then bring him back and put him in the bullpen. So I think they need to put him in the spot, give him the spot, and let him pitch. You know, Zach Davies is still around. And then, like, here they have Adrian Hauser penciled in as the fifth starter. I don't know if that'll stay. You know, they have some other options. You know, maybe Brent Sutter gets the spot, or Jake Faria, who came over from Tampa Bay. But it's going to be a young rotation either way.
It's Adrian. You know me. I'm not Mr. Fantasy bad, but I have a tendency to – I always saw the A. Hausner, and I thought his name was Allen.
So, yeah, you know, no, he's Adrian. I'm looking at it here, so. But, yeah, like I said, it's going to be an interesting – well, it's always an interesting offseason, but, you know, for some of these teams – you know, like Milwaukee and even Washington with all the moves they've made, it'll be fun to see how they kind of try to keep themselves in the playoffs or in playoff contention.
Yeah.
You know, and then I know, like, locally here, to absolutely nobody's surprise, the Cubs picked up the option on Anthony Rizzo because that's a really good deal with
that's
really good money for a really
guy.
Good player. Yeah, so... Well, you know, that and his contract, for the player Rizzo is, that contract is incredibly team-friendly. So, you know, there's no surprise at all that they were going to, you know, they were going to jump on that. Yeah. So, what is it here? Let me see it. Yeah, he'll make, his salary does jump to $16.5 million. They've got another option next year for the exact same salary, so look for the Cubs to exercise that option as well on him. You know, if Rizzo was on the free agent market, he'd be a $20 to $22 million a year player. So the Cubs are getting a fantastic loan.
You know, with that said, you would assume that they would be looking to extend that offer next year, but if they don't and they get into talks and can't come to an agreement, do you think Rizzo finally lets go of his tenure with Jed and Theo, seeing as maybe he didn't get paid what he was technically worth?
You know, that's always possible. You know, some guys are, you know, they hold that, you know, like I'm kind of wondering that, when, you know, Chris Bryant finally gets the free agency here in a couple years. Because remember last year, you know, they offered him the big deal, but it was 10 years at $100 million. You know, he was awarded $12.9 in arbitration last year. This year, they're estimating he's going to get $18.5.
Which is more than the qualifying offer.
Right, you got to wonder if that lowball offer sticks with him. You know it's going to stick with Boris. He's going to say, well, remember when you offered my guy this? So, yeah, it could be interesting. But here, Dana, the Cubs arbitration guys are Bryant, Baez, who scheduled their these are estimates, 9.3, Schwarber at $8 million, Addison Russell at $5.1 million, Contreras at $4.5 million, Almora at $1.8 million, and then Kyle Ryan at $1.1 million. How many of these guys are back on the team next year? There are 1, 2, 3, 4, 7 of them.
All of them? All of them?
You think they all come back, or do one or two of them maybe get dealt off hoping to save a little money?
I mean, $1 million let's just say Almora and Ryan, which I don't even remember who that is. What do you really save in letting them go? Nothing. So that really has no impact on you, so you might as well keep them around. Plus, you've kind of tucked Almora down in there, so it's not like he's had a time to shine. And they say he did, but, you know, when he did, then he was quickly pulled out because, you know, because the numbers said he wasn't going to play good against such and such. So it's a whole other topic. But, yeah. You know, I mean, I think you could let – you can move Bryant. But if you move Baez, I think that starts to make the fan base wonder what the hell are you guys doing to my team. You know, I mean, because I know – that isn't always what's considered when you're putting a team together is the fan base. But, and I'll bring this up till it happens or he doesn't get re-signed again. But when Theo gets, when it gets hot under the collar for Theo and things start taking a wrong turn and he starts taking the blame, he runs. So, you know, we'll see what happens. I would think they would keep Bryant because, you know, the relationship that he and Rizzo had with David Ross. And, you know, I think it'll be interesting to see what a guy like he is going to do as a coach. But it just kills me the things that they say, like, oh, you don't, a guy like David Ross, you don't give a lineup to. Well, how can you say that being as he has no reputation as a manager? So,
well, now,
you know,
you haven't talked about this, but do you think it's possible that part of the reason Ross got the job was to try to keep Bryant with the Cubs?
I never even thought of that, to be honest. But, you know, how did they get John Lester, David Ross?
Well, they had Theo. You know, well, Theo had that relationship with the Red Sox.
Yeah, but you remember the whole David Ross was there first, and oh yeah, it'll be cool, dude.
Yeah.
Theo's not going to run out on us like he did last time. And I know that conversation didn't happen. I'm just making that one up. But you know, I mean, that's definitely a huge possibility. But I really don't think, you know, like I know David Ross so well. I, you know, from the way he talks on TV. From the analyst positions he held, I don't think that David Ross is going to get involved with that aspect of Chris Bryant's career. You know what I mean? I think he's going to tell him the positives. I think he's going to encourage him, but I don't think David Ross is going to stand there and be like, dude, you got to stay here, you know, accept $5 million a year. You'll be okay. We're going to win 12 more World Series.
So, but then are you happy with like Kyle Schwarber at $8 million and then Addison Russell at 5-1, or do we finally see Russell leave?
I think for the quality, number one, they need to take off the hitting off of some of these players. Because like I said, you can't have 1 through 8 all be, I don't know, what's the acceptable batting average now, 260? With 25, 35 home runs. Some of it you have to rely on defense. And that's what won the Cubs the World Series, was defense, not 100% offense. So I think if you keep Russell $5 million, that's pretty much a steal unless you let him walk and you go after my guy, Didi Gregorius. Then I think you'll be comfortably safe. But even with that, if you went after Didi, I still think you keep Russell. I think the safest move for them to make would be to find a way to move Schwarber. And let's be honest, you're not going to get major league ready pitching for Schwarber. I really don't know what you would get for Schwarber, but you've got to be able to get some kind of high quality, low end prospects into this system that are pitchers.
Yeah. Well, you know,
then again, I don't know because they've never developed.
You would do all right, wouldn't you?
Oh, yeah.
You know, if you found an American League team for them, would you be willing to give a little more?
That's possible, and I think you'd have to find an American League team that doesn't buy into all the sabermetrics 100% and actually believes in Chris or Kyle Schwarber. Because they could sit here and tell you all this and that and whatever, but let's be honest. Knowing that Kyle Schwarber was not allowed to bat against left-handed pitching, what does that say to you? It says you don't believe in your player. So don't give me that horse manure. So I think that's what the best thing for Kyle Schwarber would be, to find him a home in American League team and let him actually hit and not worry about the outfield anymore, which I don't really think he has an issue so much. I don't know that the arm is there the way you'd want it to be, but I don't know. I think you could definitely facilitate him in the outfield a couple days a week if needed, but I would let him become the quote-unquote professional hitter that everyone loves to have.
Well, you know, I did find it interesting, you know, looking at a couple projected lineup with just the way things are now, everybody's under the impression that Ian Happ is the Cubs' starting center fielder next year. Are you excited about that?
Yeah, because he may start off the season with a home run and then get sent down to the minors on April 28th.
So, yeah, I was just kind of like, oh, okay, that's interesting.
Well, and, you know, I'm not going to knock the kid. You know, he doesn't smile, which that has nothing to do with anything. I was trying to remember some of the stupid things from Moneyball, but I don't know what his girlfriend looks like or if he has one. Or, you know, let's just not even say girlfriend. Let's say a significant other. I don't know if, you know, the quality is up to, but whatever. I just, you know, when he was dropped down and the anticipation came for him to come back up, the Cubs fan nation was all like, oh, no. You know, look at his numbers in the minor league. He wasn't doing good then, but he's been, you know, doing a lot better. He's pounding the ball in the minor leagues. I had to remind everybody it's in the minor leagues. But yet everyone was buying into the fact that he was going to come back up and save the middle infield. And then lo and behold, we had this new kid come up that's the new savior. I forgot his name already. The one that was in like that last week of baseball. Yes.
Nico Horner.
You know, Nico Horner came in and we're all like, Ian who?
Yeah. Well, you know, Hop has had his struggles. I mean, you know, he hasn't been good is the only way to kind of really say it. I mean, I don't know. Maybe he was rushed, you know, possibly because he did, you know, he was another guy who was brought up very early.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, you have to kind of, you know, question how these things are or what they're doing. But, yeah.
Well, you know, the other thing I have to wonder, too, and I don't know if, you know, last year was the campaign of MLB, let the kids play, blah, blah, blah. So I don't know if that's a secret GM meeting portion of the winter meeting or GM meeting where you get to meet with the commissioner and the marketing team and you all sit around and, you know, hey, this year we want to let the kids play. So, you know, anyone over 30, maybe you should not play them and bring up a kid who's not ready yet. Now, of course, I'm looking a little too far deep into it because, you know, I do have my conspiracy theories, just like in Chicago where you're not allowed to talk bad about the local teams. Otherwise, you'll lose your job if you're a reporter. And if you don't believe me, listen to anybody who covers one of the local teams, and they might as well just have their lips permanently sewn on to the asses of the owners of those teams. Because they can't be anything.
Yeah, well, you know, as odd as it is to look at or figure out or however you want to do it, Hop actually hit better after coming back up to the Cubs than he did in Iowa.
Go figure.
Yeah. So I don't know. You know, like he hit 242 at Iowa. He hit 264 with the Cubs. He actually struck out at a lower rate in the major leagues than he did at Iowa.
Is that because he was competing with Ben Zobrist, so he didn't have as much playing time?
Well, you know, he still got, 158, 156 at bat, or 140 at bats, 58 games. But, the strikeout rate is marginally lower. You know, it's 39 strikeouts with the Cubs to 113 in Iowa in just 99 games.
Yeah, but, you know, if you gave him the extra 50 games.
That'd be a lot of strikeouts, though. I mean, he'd have to go on a binge to get to that number. Now, to be fair, when he played the full season with the Cubs in 2018, he struck out 167 times.
Maybe that's
something he worked on in the minors and he picked up when he got to the majors. It would be nice if, he could take some pitches and swing at strikes. That's obviously going to help you.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, he's still just 25. So, yeah, I who knows? Will they get anything out of him? Won't they? Who knows? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, he's still. You would think at that age, yeah, you're right. The time would be now. You have to see what he's got going on. I mean, the problem with him though is. When he's not materializing and hitting, home run every 12th or 15th at bat, how upset is everyone going to be when you have an outfield that may combine for, 40 home runs for the season? Depending on where Schwarber is,
Schwarber,
you can get up to 60.
What are you talking about?
Before
we run out of time, I wanted to ask you here if you were surprised that the Pirates picked up Chris Archer's option. You know, they're going to pay him $9 million. They could have bought him out for $1.75. I know he ended up injured at the end of the season last year, but let's be fair. He hasn't, they've had him for a year and a half, and he hasn't been very good.
Mm-hmm.
He's 6-12 with a 4.92 ERA with Pittsburgh.
Yeah, maybe they're thinking this year will be the year where he can kind of pop it off and they can get something decent come All-Star break.
I'm not surprised they picked up Starling Marte's option because the talk is they want to deal him and they think they can get a big return for him. Archer actually has another option year for next year on his contract, and the buyout is even lower then. It's only $250,000 to buy him out next year. So who knows? But, another young guy, he's 30? Or no, he's 31 now. He just turned 31 at the end of September. So, as pitchers go, maybe he finds it this year?
He needs to.
So
be a great year to find it.
Yeah, he was a guy like I always liked in Tampa Bay, but another one of those deals where you leave Tampa and all of a sudden you can't play baseball anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I don't understand what the deal is though. Yeah. So how that continues to happen. But all right, I guess we can continue this tomorrow. Hit the music. But don't forget that you can listen to the podcast anytime you want at TuneIn.com.
FourthTimeRadio.com.